Mini episode 1621 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1621. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris here. And I have with me today one of my favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu, to help break down the 2023 NBA Finals. And this is one where, just to pull back the curtain a little bit here, I don't expect anybody to hear this one. This is one that we probably just kind of keep in the archives as far as like the show that never was, because we're recording this just in case we need it before Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals here, Denver and Miami. This is not the scenario we expect to have play out. We have to approach it as though this is the scenario, because again, they're not leaving us a lot of lead time before the finals. We want to get this in with as much lead time as humanly possible. And so this is on the off chance that Miami does do what neither one of us thinks they have any chance of doing right now: get up off the mat and make it happen in a Game 7 in Boston after blowing the previous three. So I guess I'll bring in Ben Chu by saying facetiously here at the moment, Ben, what an incredible moment in Game 7. The Heat get up off the mat. This is almost unprecedented in sports history for a team to blow it that badly and then bring it back at the last minute. I can't think of a precedent for what we just saw in Game 7, Ben Chu.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it, man. Duncan Robinson caught fire. Jimmy Butler played exceptionally well. I also think, too, Rick, you know, a lot of that, you know, the final couple of minutes of that game was absolutely incredible. Arguably some of the best basketball we've seen both teams play in the series.
So. Crowd was on fire, yeah. Ben. Crowd was on fire. Props to them for winning on the road and overcoming that. And, I mean, I'm pretty sure somebody was waving an urn with Red Auerbach's ashes down on the bench there. I mean, it was you talk about a hostile atmosphere, my man. I mean, they're, you know,
we have discussed that we are not Bostonians, but that is arguably one of the greatest fan experiences in the NBA.
So. Absolutely, yeah. Bring in the dropkick Murphys.
It was mentally tough to come back for that. You know, Max Strus finally got off the hook, so...
Yeah, I mean, the dropkick...
Everybody is a big winner, and then we will have a very interesting NBA Finals.
Dropkick Murphys with a performance on court after the third quarter to get everybody fired up for the end here, and Miami gets it going anyways here. So Denver-Miami, you know, we said a couple of years ago, we did a segment here on the show about that was one of the great player development angles here in the NBA in recent years, what they're doing in Denver, what they're doing in Miami, in San Antonio, and now with Wembanyama going to San Antonio, you know, all those things here, Wembanyama is going to benefit from that atmosphere. The Cavs are a team, I think you could say, that has done pretty well in player development the last couple of years, but Denver and Miami, two of the big takeaway success stories. And when you look at the big megastar on either team, Jokic and Butler, I mean, that kind of sets the stage right there. That Butler was a guy that, what was he? I think the last pick in the 2011 NBA draft, I believe, which proved to be a great draft in retrospect. Maybe he wasn't the last pick. No, because I think that was, what's his face? The point guard, the little shrimpy guy. He was the last pick. But Butler was an afterthought in the 2011 NBA draft. And Jokic was a second-round draft pick. So, again, the centerpiece of each team. This is the kind of series that gives faith out there to all the fans of downtrodden teams. You too can come in here and end up making the NBA Finals, making it happen here, because, again, you don't necessarily have to have. It helps to have Victor Wembanyama. It helps to have a guy like that. But these are stories where, again, if you were a long-suffering Denver Nuggets fan, and how many of those were there through the lean years, let's be honest, you probably weren't thinking to yourselves, gee, when we get just the right guy in, what was it, the 2014 NBA draft in the second round, we're going to build around him and go on to the championship. I don't think anybody was thinking that.
No, I don't think so, too. And the level of disrespect for Isaiah Thomas. Right?
Yes, yes, Isaiah. I was forgetting who, the little shrimpy guy.
The level of disrespect. Anyway,
I love it.
They're both of the, in general, the, I mean, the Denver Nuggets have been the sort of team that's been on the incline ever since Jokic was able to get there. And just some of the things, I mean, if you even look back to his rookie season that he was able to do, and the incremental improvement of his game has just been absolutely incredible to see. And what essentially he's turned into is he's turned into, I guess, prime Wilt Chamberlain in today's game. And it just, it's incredible to see someone who can sort of control the game from the big man position. Because we haven't really seen a guy who has that sort of, like, bulk and size probably since Wilt. And I guess you could say Magic a little bit, too, with his ability to look over people, really run an offense and have people play off of him. It's an experience I think the NBA has seen more now, like with Steph Curry, with LeBron, where you have these superstar talents who essentially are playmakers on the floor. And just seeing, like, Jokic's progression, which you could see he was a good passer his rookie season, but to see where he's essentially now top 10 in the league in assists is absolutely amazing, in my opinion.
It is incredible. And Butler, by the way, as I just looked it up here, I was half right. He was the last pick in the first round, not the last pick overall in 2011, but that's the kind of pedigree that he didn't have, same as Jokic. So both of these guys, supremely overlooked, coming into the league, becoming the bell cow for each of these two teams here trying to win a championship. And again, in Miami, the parts that they've been able to put around him, Bam Adebayo, that was a guy where coming in, it was thought by a lot of people right off the bat how well he would fit into the Miami system. And he really, really has. And this is one of these things where he's going to be hard-pressed, just like anybody else that Miami's got, in terms of having bodies to put on Jokic to slow him down, because we've seen how nigh unto impossible that is. But Adebayo is an interesting guy here as well, that he has flourished in this climate in recent years of the bigger guys getting into the playmaking a little bit here. The door that Jokic knocked down, Adebayo, in at least some small ways, has passed through that door himself.
Right, and I think ultimately in this series, Bam and Jokic is probably going to be the major matchup that everyone's going to be talking about, because it feels like if Bam is one of the few players in today's NBA that has sort of the size and agility that Jokic can have on the floor. So it's going to be very interesting to see how their matchup sort of unfolds during the series. And for me personally, just I'm intrigued to see, coming off of the Boston series, if Eric Spoelstra decides to give Bam a little bit more playmaking opportunities. Because we saw in those final three games where Boston all won, it felt like Jimmy Butler and Gabe Vincent were the two guys leading the offense.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see if Bam, with that matchup with Jokic, is going to get a little more playmaking opportunities.
You would think so, yeah. I mean, again, if you're Spoelstra at this point, I mean, I think you got to throw the kitchen sink out there for as formidable as Denver looks right now, for the fact that they've been sitting there at home resting up. And yes, rest can turn into rust, no question about that, but you'd rather be Denver than Miami right now. The first two games being played at altitude, which you and I keep coming back to as far as an incredible boost for them at this point. Miami gassed after a seven-game series when it should have been over in four if they would have taken care of their business. So this is a thing where, in terms of looking at this, that, again, Denver, an incredible amount of depth that they have, because inarguably one more superstar quality guy in the starting lineup in Jamal Murray, and then, you know, based on your definition of star, whether you put Michael Porter Jr. in there, I think I would as well. You look even beyond that, the rest of their starting lineup is certainly pretty strong as well, with Gordon and Pope. And a bench with some key players in there like Brown and Jackson who can really come in here. And for Miami, they've been able to kind of make it work with their cast of characters and a whole list of unsung heroes, everybody stepping up at different moments in time here. Kevin Love getting a little bit more relegated to outside the rotation or the regular part of it towards the end of the last round. But And looking at it in the finals here, Denver, I think, with an advantage in terms of depth, they have, with all due respect to Jimmy Butler, the best player in Jokic right now, and a lot of advantages, not least of which the altitude, that Miami is going to be very, very hard-pressed to try to counter.
And I think, too, Rick, this is one of those things we always say in professional sports, especially in the NBA, baseball, and the NHL, where if you're a team that has a sizable lead, you have to close the door early.
Yeah.
And just essentially gain that recuperation, gain that rest. And it feels like to me, Miami, I'll be honest, they are a very heavy underdog at this point.
Sure.
I'm not saying that it's not possible for win the series. I refuse to believe there's never a scenario with Jimmy Butler involved that he cannot lead this Heat team to a championship. It just feels like having to go through this sort of a series where you played seven hard-fought games, you only have 3 days essentially leading into the finals, and you have to go play in Denver at altitude with their home fans, probably super excited for their first ever NBA Finals appearance. It's a tall task. They have one of the better coaches in the NBA, Eric Spoelstra, so I think he'll be up to the challenge. It's ultimately, in my opinion, going to come down to is can they keep their hot shooting going, and can they make timely baskets? And I think they can definitely push Denver, because again, Rick, we do not know what the injury situation will be for Denver in the series, because they've been kind of relatively scooting through the playoffs without many injury concerns. There's always a scenario that someone on Denver gets an injury that causes their rotation to go out of whack, or Miami essentially decides to use a little bit more of their bench to try and put Denver in more compromising positions at periods of time.
Yeah, and it's one of these things where, in terms of regular season numbers, I do feel like there's been a sort of progression to the mean with Miami getting to play beyond 82 games, because I feel like they were incredibly flukishly bad in a number of different areas during the regular season, particularly for a team with as much shooting power as they do have potentially from time to time here, especially with Hero and Robinson. And of course, they do miss Hero in the playoffs here, which makes it all the more incredible that they've bounced back from some of these really fugly numbers here as we've gone along. 20th in SRS in the regular season, 25th in offensive ranking, 25th in EFG, 21st in TS percentage, 20th in assist to turnover ratio, 26th in 3-point percentage. I mean, these are like clownishly bad numbers for a team like this, and it does explain why they were just a play-in team coming in here and why they looked as poorly as they did. And it's very, very interesting that there is a very strong line of correlation between them and their fellow market team here, the Florida Panthers, particularly Sergei Bobrovsky with his huge career renaissance during the playoffs here when he had a really bad regular season. And he's been a really good goalie earlier in his career, especially in the 2010s. There is a thing here where if you have that bad of a regular season and it seems a little bit kind of out of character for you, bouncing back in the playoffs, that has been a theme in Miami, regardless of sport, this spring in the playoffs.
Right, and especially with their ability to be mentally tough and their ability to make shots, that's always hard for any team to face in the finals, because if you're getting guys who are consistent, making plays, if the biggest thing I would say for the Miami Heat is that if Butler can play consistently throughout the finals at altitude, and they can steal one or two games in Denver, they have a very legitimate shot at winning the finals. It just is ultimately going to come down to is their hot shooting at top times going to keep up, because of this pace, I would expect a lull was going to occur at some point.
Well, and it's such an incredible amount of pressure coming in, and it's one of these things where, again, I might get a little bit of PTSD recalling this here, but my Cleveland Cavs in the finals in 2017 and 2018, once Golden State loaded the deck by adding Kevin Durant to it, where you knew you had no margin for error. And it's a thing where, and yet, going in, you got to win at least one game on the other court. And that's the whole thing here, too, that Miami not only has to find a way to steal one in Denver at altitude when they've just come off a seven-game series and Denver came off a sweep. Not only that, it's a thing where if you're not impeccable on your home court, if you let Denver steal one there, and they're certainly good enough, then you got to win two in Denver. I mean, this is where, again, I don't feel that this series is quite as lopsided as those two were, especially 2018. Once Kyrie had scooted from Cleveland, then it was really, really, really lopsided. I'm not getting that same kind of sense here, but I am getting the same kind of sense of zero margin for error if you're Miami. And for a team that had plenty of error in games 4, 5, and 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals, it's a lot to assume that they're just going to find that switch and flip it.
Right. And again, too, Rick, we also have to consider that every series is different. And maybe Miami learns from some of the errors that they made in the Boston series and how they'll treat Denver at the end of the day. And ultimately, we also have to put some of this on Denver. They've sort of cruised through the playoffs in the Western Conference. But let us not forget, this team does not have exactly a lot of NBA Finals experience.
Right.
So it feels like, to me, all these sort of little things that could be impactful for the Miami Heat are kind of going to come down to how Denver plays and how well their shooting keeps up.
I agree. And again, it's going to be an awful lot for Miami to even, I'd say, really make this a hard-fought series, much less come in and win it. But let's get to the bottom line here. Again, over the course of the last 8 years that you and I have been doing finals previews together, I am 6-2. I'm darn good over that stretch. I missed in 2019. I missed in 2021. But you were right in those 2 years, and you were agreeing with me every one of the 6 years that I won. So that's a long, fancy way of saying you're 8-0 over that stretch of time, going for 9-0 here. And again, this is like the jinx of all jinxes, because this probably, it's not like we're, going to cause Jokic to blow out his knee in game one or something like that. But it doesn't feel like it's going to be terribly tough for either of us to pad our records here in this finals with Denver. I almost never do this, but here's what I am going to do. I'm going to pick Denver in 4 because they're going to defend the home court in Denver the first two. And then it's just a matter of what's Miami going to have left after that. And if Denver gets game 3, they're going to take game 4. And I think Denver's probably better than a coin flip in game 3. I'm going to take them in 4, which I almost never do. So yeah, I throw it to you for your prediction. I know the team. I just don't know how long you think it's going to go.
I mean, for me, I truly think, especially with these finals and the way that Miami plays and the way Jimmy Butler plays, I lean towards this not being a sweep.
Mm-hmm.
For me personally, I think there's since they were competitive with them in the regular season, I do think this series will be interesting, and getting some home court advantage back in Miami is really going to help the Heat. I'm going to go with Denver in 6. I do think Jimmy Butler has the ability to pull out a game or two himself, like we saw against the Lakers in the bubble. So for me, I'm going to go Denver in 6.
Well, Jimmy Butler, if he can get it to 6 games, then I think he's going to be back exactly where he was going into game 4 of the Eastern Conference Finals, when he had, just like 3 years ago, really elevated himself to among the best players in the league, a short list of the best players in the league. If he can stretch this Miami team to 6, he's going to be right back there, because, I think there was a little bit of tarnish that came on in the Eastern Conference Finals as it went along, even with them sneaking through in the end. But, I think, Jimmy Butler is going to, it's not going to be much consolation to him, because he's all about winning. But he's going to have back all the respect that might have slipped away based on the way that some of the games went against Boston. But we shall see. Respect is something, of course, that always comes our way for these great basketball discussions that we have. Thank you very much, Ben Chu. Much appreciated, as always.
No problem, Rick. Appreciate it.
Great to have you here, Ben. And thank you, everybody, for joining us for FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1621.